Welcome to my podcast, Paper Son, Chinese American Citizen. This is episode 9. Episode, I spoke about the landmark Supreme Court decision Wong Kim Ark that permanently enshrined the concept of jus soli into American immigration and naturalization law. Also spoke about in detail on Angel Island and its notorious reputation in American and Chinese immigration history. The 1906 earthquake devastated San Francisco. One of the unforeseen consequences was it worsened and complicated the Chinese immigration issue. The history accounts are not entirely clear when the term paper son first arose. The usual reference to the term is in the aftermath of the San Francisco earthquake. As will be clear, however, the term and its deployment could have been around for a long time before the earthquake. It is less important when the term was conceived and the process it references began. It is more important to understand what the term paper son meant. The earthquake caused widespread devastation, destruction, fires, and looting, particularly in Chinatown in San Francisco. The destruction and the fires also destroyed citizen, birth, and immigration records that were kept in San Francisco. The destruction of the records caused confusion and difficulties. That created a need and a new way for Chinese immigrants to further avert American immigration law. Here is how. A Chinese man would claim their wife gave birth in the United States to a child. The slot, as it was euphemistically called, would generate fake paperwork that was then sold to another Chinese person. That enabled them to claim they were a natural-born citizen of the United States. This scheme was not only limited to paper sons. Paper daughters existed too. It was, however, much more prevalent with sons. The ruse worked, was rampant, profitable for those involved in it. Eventually, American immigration officials caught on to the subterfuge. Officials began to notice that the number of paper sons far outnumbered paper daughters by a ratio of 400 to 1. A federal judge at that time remarked that every Chinese woman in America 25 years before must have had 500 children. Immigration officials started extensive interrogations of both the man claiming to have fathered a child as well as the child claiming American citizenship. For the child claiming citizenship, the realities of the ruse were enormous and consequential. They had to change their name. They also had to memorize almost any conceivable detail about the person and new family they claimed. Details such as addresses, number of relatives, number of family members, how many rooms existed, where they lived, and so on. The answers were then compared to the answers provided by their alleged father. By the early 20th century, the United States government had begun interior enforcement of her immigration laws, intended to root out illegal Chinese throughout America. By 1920, America's north and south borders were effectively secure and closed to Chinese migrants. America's disdain for Chinese continued unabated. To be fair, however, there were governmental efforts to expand exclusion to all Asiatic people. So, America's disdain was not always exclusively for the Chinese. In the winter of 1907-1908, the United States entered into a gentleman's agreement with the government of Japan. They agreed to prevent the migration of Japanese and Korean workers into America if the worker had no family in the United States. In 1917, the United States excluded all migrants from the Asian region. India, Burma, Thailand, Asiatic Russia, Polynesia, and parts of Arabia and Afghanistan. In May of 1924, Congress passed and enacted the John Reed Act, known harmlessly as the Immigration Act of 1924. It has also been referred to as the National Origins Act. It was America's first and truly comprehensive immigration and naturalization law. There was something for all immigrants, be they from Asia or Europe. For the first time, quotas were set for all immigrants, but favoring Europeans by far. Almost all Asians and their descendants were excluded from entry into America, as they were deemed, quote, aliens ineligible for citizenship, unquote. What quotas there were set for Chinese, for instance, were particularly pernicious. The quotas for Chinese, unlike their European counterparts, were based on ethnicity rather than country of origin. The 1924 Immigration Act further amended the merchant class in the Chinese Exclusion Act. Merchants had to be engaged in international trade between the United States and China. That change narrowed the exemption and made it more difficult for Chinese merchants to qualify. All of the latest revisions, and with the enactment of the 1924 Act, went far beyond the original goals of the Chinese exclusion laws. The noose ever tightened. After nearly 40 years of legislation aimed at Chinese, it was not surprising that weird and seemingly incongruous results occurred. Two cases decided by the United States Supreme Court on the same day typify that point. Both cases pertain to exclusion of Chinese family members, but also typify the hodgepodge history of American immigration policy and jurisprudence. In Cheong Sum Shi versus Nagel, 268 U.S. Reporter, page 336, decided in 1925, a Chinese merchant attempted to bring his family into America from China. They were refused entry because the 1924 Immigration Act did not mention the right of a merchant to bring his family. The Supreme Court, however, ruled in the merchant's favor. It opined that Congress, with the passage of the 1940 Act, had not explicitly abrogated the 1880 treaty with China. That treaty granted the merchant the right to bring his family. In the court's very next decision in Chang Chan versus Nagel, 268 U.S. reporter, page 346, also decided, of course, in 1925. The Supreme Court denied entry of a Chinese wife of an American citizen. The court held that the case was radically different than its immediately preceding opinion because the cause made no claim of right granted or guaranteed by treaty. The point to take from these opinions is that American immigration law was inconsistent. The bombing of Pearl Harbor in 1941 by the Japanese changed everything. The United States found itself in World War II and needed an Asian ally to help herself in the fight against Japan. China was the perfect ally for America. Not only could China help the United States in the war against Japan, the struggle of the Chinese nationalists to establish a democratic republic in China appealed to the United States. China would become partners with the Allies to fight and defeat fascism and socialism. The American media started to depict Chinese as loyal, dependable, brave, honest, and hardworking. In May of 1942, a group of Americans, mostly white, founded the Citizens Committee to repeal Chinese exclusion. They argued the United States should end exclusion for moral, practical, and war reasons. Japan started its own propaganda campaign highlighting America's past aggressions against the Chinese, that America was racist and could not be trusted. Fearing losing China support, Franklin Delano Roosevelt urged Congress to repeal Chinese exclusion and to step up the president's own propaganda to repeal Chinese exclusion. He invited Madam Chiang Kai-shek to visit the United States. Mei Ling Song was the American-educated wife of the leader of the Chinese Republic, Chiang Kai-shek. In the late fall of 1942, she was urged by Roosevelt to rally support against Japanese aggression. She did a one-month cross-country tour, appearing at speaking events. Americans were mesmerized by her proficiency in the English language, her charm, grace, and beauty. She became the first Chinese woman to address a joint session of Congress, only the second woman to ever do that. All the efforts to repeal Chinese exclusion finally came to fruition in 1943. The Immigration Act of 1943, better known as the Magnuson Act, repealed the Chinese exclusion laws. Finally, after 60 years, the Chinese would be placed into the same immigration laws most every immigrant had been subject. The Act's intent was to shift Chinese immigrants into the framework of the 1924 Immigration Act's quota system. Formally introduced by and named for Democrat United States Senator Warren Magnuson, President Roosevelt signed it into law on December 17, 1943. The repeal was certainly symbolic and a friendly gesture to China as an ally in their fierce war with the Japanese. As importantly, for the first time in decades, Chinese would be allowed to become American citizens. Even with the passage of the Magnuson Act, however, the Chinese still would be treated differently than other immigrants. The annual quota for Chinese was set ridiculously low. Congress would only allow 105 Chinese immigrants to naturalize. Additionally, unlike other immigrants to the United States, based on country of origin, Chinese quotas were based on ethnicity. Not until the 1960s would the annual quotas be lifted. To some extent, the fear of and hatred toward Chinese persisted. Despite the fact that an estimated 20,000 Chinese Americans served in the United States Armed Forces during World War II, that was roughly 20% of the Chinese population in America. That is some of the highest percentages of any ethnic group in the United States. Other war-related laws were passed. The War Brides Act of 1945 and 1947 allowed military members to bring foreign spouses and children into the United States. Those entries were in addition to the quotas. Immediately after the war, record amounts of Chinese women entered into America. In 1965, Congress abolished the quota system entirely. The Hart-Celler Act, or the Immigration and Nationality Act of 1965, repealed much of the 1924 Immigration Act. By 2007, many millions of persons of full or partial Asian descent lived in the United States. And of course, as I discussed in the beginning of this podcast, Congress in 2012 formally and officially recognized and apologized for the nation's sordid history with Chinese migrants and citizens. The United States may not be much different than other nations with regard to their treatment of aliens. The Chinese were certainly not the only immigrants singled out for special treatment by the United States government. Their treatment was unique, however, and different than many others for sure. It is amazing it lasted as long as it did. It is equally amazing, despite everything we learned in this podcast, the Chinese still came. The harsh and unequal treatment they received did not stop their desire to come to America. That is either a testament to what those immigrants felt about China, or a testament of what they felt about America, or both. It is clear, even today, the Chinese still see America as the beautiful country. It is not a mistake. The Chinese word for the United States translates to beautiful country. Throughout this podcast, I have mentioned numerous United States presidents. I quoted from some of them. It seems fitting. It seems a fitting epilogue to this podcast to end with a quote from another United States president. Quote, "The bosom of America is open to receive not only the opulent and respected stranger, but the oppressed and persecuted of all nations and religions, whom we shall welcome to a participation of all our rights and privileges." Close quote. President George Washington. Thank you for listening.